Hello! Welcome to The Lore You Know, a show where we chat with some amazing human beings who are storytellers, collectors, and folklorists as we discuss the history of, inspiration behind, and importance of recording and sharing regional tales. Today, I have with me an amazing guest named Andrew Smith. Andrew, thank you for coming.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So for those people who may not know Andrew Smith for some weird reason, can you explain to them your connection to cryptozoology, please?
Yes. So actually, that was probably helping, wasn't it? My computer monitor was lighting me, but it was also reflecting on my glasses. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I have that issue too.
Yeah. So, my name is Andrew Smith. I am the executive director of the Braxton County Convention and Visitors Bureau. But the main connection that I have with cryptozoology is I run the Flatwoods Monster Museum located in Sutton, West Virginia.
Awesome. Awesome. And what are, like, if for people that want to come visit, what are the hours? What do they need to know if they want to stop by and visit you?
Okay. Well, we're open pretty much every day with the exception of some major holidays. And then, of course, unexpected staffing errors that comes up every so often, but pretty much 7 days a week. We're open on weekdays from 9 to 5 and weekends from 10 to 4.
Awesome. Yay. And I've been there a few times. It's an awesome place. You should definitely stop by. Definitely stop by. my first question for you is why the Flatwoods Monster?
You mean like as a topic, like why we are?
Yeah. Yes. Why are you dedicated to the Flatwoods Monster?
Well, because the sighting took place, you know, just right up the street from us and in Braxton County, which is our, you know, our service area for the organization that I work for. And it was pretty clear early on when I first got this job that there was a lot of interest in the Flatwoods Monster but not a lot of things people could do with that interest. So we kind of started small with a couple different small projects, and then those projects kind of got bigger and bigger until we established the Flatwoods Monster Museum in 2018.
Awesome. 2008. That's what was going to be my next question, is when you guys started, because you've moved locations a couple times, right?
Well, so not kind of, but not really at the same time. So where our past office for the Convention and Visitors Bureau was, where it was located, that is kind of where our collection grew from, but it started as, kind of like a, almost like a display that had to do with the Flatwoods Monster. And then that display kind of grew and grew into what I called at the time, like a mini museum. And then, when the organization moved locations, we ended up getting this space, which was quite big, and was kind of overkill for a visitor center, which was technically really all we had before. But it was big enough that it could be both those things. So we really, whereas before it was like a visitor center with a Flatwoods Monster section, now it's like a Flatwoods Monster Museum with a visitor center section.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So are you originally from Braxton County? Is this your home?
No. So originally I'm from Grantsville, which is Calhoun County, which is a neighboring county. I mean, as far as most people would be concerned, the answer would really be yes. but only kind of not really. And really, I guess the reason why I say that is because, like, I moved to Braxton County when I was in sixth grade. So I have lived here for a very long time. And and that's when I first learned about the Flatwoods Monster. Before that, I didn't know anything about it. So I've lived here long enough that it more or less counts.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah. I agree. That's long enough for sure. When you first heard of the Flatwoods Monster, how did that come about? Was it something in school? Was it a friend or How did that happen?
Yeah, and I wish I could remember exactly when it happened and who I was talking with. But I do recall it would have had to have taken place during the first year that I lived here. So it would have been during sixth grade for sure. Mm-hmm. And I remember it coming up very casually in a conversation, like just the word Flatwoods Monster. And then it being kind of quickly sort of glossed over and moved on. Mm-hmm. Where since I was in, you know, I don't know how old I would have been exactly at the time, however old you are in sixth grade, but I remember it hitting me like, wait a second. Why are we, you said the word monster, right? And then like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, okay, how did we move on so quick? Let's go back. What are you talking about? So this was actually before I would have even really been aware of maybe anything, you know, cryptozoology related or monster related. I'm sure I would have heard of Bigfoot. Well, I guess that's not true because I watched Unsolved Mysteries religiously as a kid, and stuff like that was brought up. But I guess I never thought of the idea that something could be, I could live there, you know, where it happened. So that's where blew my mind. But like I said, you know, the kids that I was talking to, they would just bring it up and I would have to sort of make them go into it, like almost like, you know, like I was boring them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh man. Well, certainly you've brought a lot of excitement back to it by having the museum. I would think that it doesn't get glossed over quite as quickly anymore, I would hope.
Well, I don't know. I mean, as far as locals go, it probably does. Because, you know, you can only know about something for so long or be exposed to something for so long before it just becomes part of the scenery. And right. I think that's what's happened for most of the people that live here is, mm-hmm. you know, you know, I celebrate the Flatwoods Monster, but in a way, it's the same things kind of happened to me. You know, it's literally a part of my everyday life to where right. like, it will dawn on me occasionally, like how fantastic this story is and how weird it is. Cause I'll be telling somebody about it. And to me, In all honesty, I may as well be rattling off a grocery list, but then like I'll see the look on their face of like astonishment, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is really weird. It's weird to have an encounter with a 10-foot tall alien.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, but it's just I think it just happens.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, would you be willing to rattle off the grocery list of what happened exactly for the Flatwoods Monster?
Yeah, I'll do my best. it's strange. You would think something like this would be a thing that you'd be so well practiced in that you would never forget anything or miss a detail. But I do it. I do all the time. I miss stuff. I forget stuff constantly. But yeah, so for anybody that doesn't know about the Flatwoods Monster, the sort of the basic tale is that on September 12th, 1952, there were a bunch of kids playing around the Flatwoods Elementary School. There was like a lawn area and neighborhood kids would just play there. And it was in the evening, not quite dark yet, but it was like not pitch black dark, but it was not bright daylight. And these kids witnessed an object streak across the sky and appear on a nearby or appear to land on a nearby hilltop. And several of these kids decided that they were going to go and investigate to see what this was. And to get to this hill, they actually had to pass two of the boys' homes. There were two boys in this group that were brothers, Eddie and Fred May. And they had to pass their home. And they knew that their mother was home. So they stopped and talked to her. Her name was Kathleen May. And you know, they told him what they saw and what they were doing. And she decided that she better join them just so there's an adult around. And she also grabbed a cousin who was visiting a neighbor, Gene Lemon, who was also an adult. He was younger than her considerably, but I think he was like 19 and she was 32. So the group of seven witnesses tread up this hill, and as they're, you know, approaching the top of the hill, they notice this sort of bright pulsing light at the top of the hill that they assume is what they just saw come through the sky. But before they could get there, they were greeted in the woods. And at this point it was fairly dark because they're actually walking through the canopy of the woods. So it's blocking any light that's still shining. And they're greeted by this 10-foot tall monster that has come to be known as the Flatwoods Monster. And they describe it as being, like I said, about 10 feet tall with like a round, bright red sort of head or face with these yellow shining either eyes or lights. That part is always kind of not clear. And then with this sort of dark spade shape behind its head and this long kind of flowing green body. Which, of course, when they see this thing, you know, and they also described it as kind of gliding through the woods. It didn't appear to be walking. So when they saw this thing coming toward them, you know, they, of course, were terrified and ran back down the hill and called the local sheriff's office. And by the time the sheriff and his deputy got there, though, you know, they went up on the hill, and by this point it was pitch black and the light was gone at the top of the hill, and this mysterious figure that would come to be known as the Flatwoods Monster was gone. However, the one thing that was still lingering that they described is they said when they encountered this being, that there was this awful smell that filled the air that that burned their noses and their throats and their eyes. And that was still lingering. But otherwise, as far as I know, nothing else that they described was present at that time. But so amazingly, within just a couple days of this sighting happening, it hit local media outlets, and then regional, and then national and international within a matter of a week or two. So it made a really big impact at the time, and has sort of, that impact has lingered. And as you said earlier, you know, the more we and others, you know, sort of discuss and talk about the Flatwoods Monster, it's sort of captivated the world again. But but yeah, so for in 1952, this was a huge international incident.
Mm-hmm. How did the community handle that? Do you know?
So I only kind of know because, you know, I have the luxury and the privilege to know a lot of people that were around at that time. But I only really know of a few. So all the viewpoints that I have on it come from, you know, maximum of maybe five people as far as firsthand accounts.
Right.
But that's still, I mean, it's still a lot. Mm-hmm. And one of them being, my wife's, my wife's grandmother. She was 14 at the time and actually was up on that hill the very next day.
Oh, and wow.
The way that she describes it, as well as half of Braxton County. But but it seems like if people fall into, well, one, it made a huge impact. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, in the words of Freddie May, you know, one of the witnesses who was a boy at the time, he thinks that this incident literally put Flatwoods on the map. Like before this incident, you probably wouldn't see Flatwoods on the map, and then afterwards you would. So it made a big impact. And I think initially people were very interested and curious, but after that wore off, people kind of fell into two camps. They were either really sort of proud that this put them on the map, or mm-hmm. they were like embarrassed that this put them on the map. And in all honesty, I actually feel like the majority, if there's a local that feels embarrassed by this story or feels like that it's fake, personally, I feel like that has a whole lot more to do with the fear of something so scary happening in your backyard and not wanting to be able to acknowledge that because that's too uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So might as well act like it's silly, so then we don't have to worry about these scary things that go bump in the night. But it's kind of a 50-50 split. As far as the impact it made then and with the people that were around at the time. Contemporarily, I feel like it's much more positively received. And I think in general, particularly for the people that weren't around at the time, this can be seen more through the lens of folklore mm-hmm. and as a story rather than necessarily a concrete piece of reality that mm-hmm. have to face. Right. So locally now it seems like the feelings toward the Flatwoods Monster as a whole are overwhelmingly positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else? You have the museum in Flatwoods or in Sutton there, but there are other things that you guys have to kind of promote. Oh no. You still there?
Yes.
Okay.
Last thing you said.
Okay. Yeah. So there are things in Sutton other than the museum to help kind of promote Flatwoods or the monster itself. Can you speak to that a little bit about other things the community does or has, like just sitting around maybe to bring awareness?
Yeah, I see where you're leading me. I'm assuming what you're wanting me to talk about is the Flatwoods Monster Chairs. Those are spread out all over Braxton County, but there are two in Sutton. I think currently because one we just recently had to move because of the property owners needed it moved from where it was. So we brought it into Sutton, and it may end up being temporary. It may not. But yes, there's one just like a block away from us now. And then one probably three blocks away from us going the other direction. But there are three more though in total that are spread around. There's one in Flatwoods proper. There's one in Gasaway, and there's one at Holly Gray Park. So there's five all around. And if anybody were to come and visit all five and get your picture taken at all five, if you come into the Flatwoods Monster Museum and show us your pictures, that's a way that you can earn a sticker that we don't sell. The only way you can get it is to earn it. And it's basically what you're doing is you're taking the free Braxy challenge. So that's sort of the scavenger hunt element of it as well. But, you know, if you just want to check one out and you're already here, you can go to the one right around the corner, check it out, and then be on your way.
Yeah, that's awesome. Aside from being led to the chair discussion, what are some other ways that the community kind of brings awareness to the Flatwoods Monster?
Well, let's see. This is kind of a new thing that's pretty cool. So our local Walmart just recently had, it's not technically Monopoly. Monopoly isn't written anywhere on these on this box, but it is Monopoly. So they had this Monopoly game made where everything in it or on it, it features things that have to do with Braxton County. And, you know, the Flatwoods Monster is highly, you know, it's highly featured in the game, which is really cool. And we literally had nothing to do with it. Everybody thinks we did it, but it was just a surprise to us as it was anyone else. And I actually just recently got to play that for the first time this past Saturday. I played with my wife and an 8-year-old, and I lost first.
It didn't cause a bunch of arguments or anything, as Monopoly tends to do.
No.
Okay.
It was fun for me because as soon as I got out, then I spent time just taking pictures and video of them playing so I can make a little video promoting it, because I just think it's such a cool idea. And they're only $20 and they're made in America. I mean, it's crazy.
That's awesome.
And I have no idea how big the batches are. And it just blows my mind that they're only $20. And then something else. I don't know if this is a tangent you would like to take, but just down the block from us, two blocks, is the West Virginia Bigfoot Museum as well, dedicated to, you know, different stories and legends wrapped around with or associated with Bigfoot, Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's you've got a little monster center there.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
It is. It is. It's pretty cool. I quite. Now,
do you tend to get stories from people then, as you just coming in? This is a monster museum. I've had a monster encounter. Do you get those kind of stories?
Yes, I do. Occasionally, and the sad part of that is, I have a not good memory at all. So like, I'll get people that it's obvious that they had an encounter of some sort, either they encountered something weird that they can't explain that might be sort of cryptozoology related, or they had some sort of weird sort of spiritual sort of thing that they can't explain, or like ghosts or something like that, or like UFOs. And just because they're in a place dedicated to something weird is enough to give them enough comfort to talk about whatever weird thing happened to them. And so people will tell you stuff, because it does seem really clear that if folks have had an encounter with something they can't explain, they really want somebody to maybe either at least help them make sense of it, or to at least hear them without thinking that they're crazy, which I'm happy to do. And I, frankly, I mean, I really enjoy hearing these accounts, but you'd be surprised that it happens with enough regularity that I don't remember what I've been told. And they really have, the majority of folks have no interest in having them officially recorded in any way, which is always a shame. And I always try to encourage it, and always try to make sure that they know that, like, you know, you can record it in as anonymous way as you want. And I try to also convince people to reach out to like local investigators who might be able to take down their data and maybe combine it with other data that they already have, you know, as a way to maybe making connections. But usually they're not interested. So that's a real shame, but every so often folks are, and I've had a decent amount of luck connecting, cause I'm not a researcher. I don't take, and I don't really take accounts. I'm trying to actually change that, because if there are people that are only going to talk to me, you know, I feel like I need to try to make the best of that as I can. So even though I'm not an investigator or a researcher, if I can't get them to connect with somebody that is, I would like to make that. I actually reached out to our mutual friend, Les O'Dell, several weeks back, because I asked him if he would share the report forms that he gives to eyewitnesses. And so I want to try to have those on hand. And I also plan on making on our website, I have the ability to make forms. I plan on creating a page dedicated to submitting encounters. And then what I plan on doing, as soon as I get those, and it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be noted in the form that, like, if you submit it to us, we will likely, you know, share that with investigators. You know, we're not going to publish it in a magazine, but, you know, that I would say that pretty much anything that I get in, I will send it to whoever makes the most sense to maybe follow up. So whether that's like Les in his part of the state, or like Joe Perdue in his part of the state, or like if somebody reaches out, they're from Pennsylvania, I might have them reach out to Gordon. Stan Gordon. So anybody that I know that I've met that maybe I could help make a connection. I'm going to try to, and hopefully that will garner, you know, some sort of additional connectivity that didn't exist before. But yeah, that is a thing that happens when you run a place dedicated to something weird. Weird stuff will find you.
In this area, just within a couple blocks of each other, you've got the Flatwoods Museum, and you have a museum dedicated to Bigfoot in West Virginia. Are there other oddities in that area? Do you guys have other things within the county that fall under the umbrella of weird?
Yeah. So actually just pretty much just across the river from us, across on the other side of the Elk River, is the Heyman House. That is an old mansion that was built. It pretty much predates almost every other structure in Sutton, because most structures in Sutton were burned during the Civil War. But it's an old, big, beautiful home that was purchased specifically to be renovated and like turned into a B&B or something like that. And the folks that bought it, according to them, you know, after they purchased the home and started doing, it was in need of some repair before it could be open to the public. You know, they would work on it on the weekends or whenever they would have time. But as they were working on this home, evidently, you know, they kept having strange experiences. And after a time of like bringing in paranormal investigators and stuff like that, they've more or less come to the conclusion that this place is haunted. So the Heyman House is another example. And something that I always kind of want to make clear is it is very strange to have all this stuff so close to one area. It could really seem like manufactured, but it's very, all this stuff really developed very oddly independently. It's been a strange confluence of things, to where like we only kind of start getting together or like working together after the fact, you know, once things actually start moving, to where like, you know, I never called up anybody and said, hey, you know, it'd be great if that old house haunted, can we make that possibility? You know, that,
right.
I think that's the last thing these folks had in mind. You know, they were just to buy a nice old house. And, and the folks that opened the Bigfoot Museum, you know, they had a store already that they had for several years in that same location, same block. And, it just so happened that, you know, as a family, they had an interest in Bigfoot just in general. And so that developed out of their own interest. But it's quite strange. It really has turned into a little paranormal hotspot.
That's pretty awesome. It's a good place to be. And you're not far away from the geographical center of West Virginia, right?
Right. Yeah. So that's always at a dispute as to where that exact point is, but pretty much all the geological experts agree that it's within Braxton County somewhere.
Yeah. No, I've seen the sign that has to be it, right? There's the sign.
Right. And so put a sign up, it has to be true.
So coming back to the museum, can you explain some of the stuff that is within the museum? I mean, you have a shop, of course, where you sell merchandise, but what are some of the items that people can view that are just unique to the museum specifically?
Okay. So basically what we try to do, we try to get our hands on like at least one of everything that's ever been made that's Flatwoods Monster related, if we can. So because of that, we kind of have just about one of every sort of like collector's item or whatever that you can think of that's been made in the likeness of the Flatwoods Monster. We probably have it on display. But what I think even more interesting than that, and sort of the pop culture aspect of the monster, which there's plenty, is on display, we have a chunk of the now dead and rotting tree that the Flatwoods Monster was said to have more or less like appeared out from behind of or next to. It was the tree used to guesstimate how tall the monster was.
Okay.
So we have a chunk of that wood. And for all I know, the stump that was pulled off of has completely rotted away to nothing at this point. And we also have a lot of personal effects that were owned by the May family, specifically Kathleen. We have a lot of her personal effects on display that were gifted to us by her son, who's now since passed away as well, Freddie May. So a lot of these sort of family relics, we feel real honored to be able to have those and put them on display for people to see, because otherwise I don't know how they're going to see them. So let me see, what else would I put up there as far as really cool? So like we have, and it's probably one of the first things that we ever had to display at our old location, was this big homemade costume that's made in the likeness of the Flatwoods Monster. And it was made sometime in the early 2000s for a stage play production that told the story of the Flatwoods Monster, that was done by a group of Braxton County Youth Theater students. Mm-hmm. So they made it. And I just think it's cool because, you know, it's made out of like, you can tell that there are like the main body is made out of like, you know, a graduation gown from Braxton County, because it's green colors as one of the primary colors. And then like the arms are made out of PVC painted red, and the face is a pizza pan painted red. And the eyes are those like old, you know, click lights that they used to sell that have, you know, batteries, you click them on. Mm-hmm. I just love how homemade it is, and that you can tell like a bunch of kids with probably the help of an adult or two, you know, built it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of personally, one of the aspects of the Flatwoods Monster that I enjoy the most is the side of things that are kind of like one step removed from the story itself, but that still hold, for me anyway, a highly sort of historic significance, or like a one, like that thing. I mean, it's kind of shoddy and it was made by people probably in their garage, but it's a one of a kind piece that was made for this particular play that they did. And so like the ephemera around how the Flatwoods Monster has been celebrated for me is just as interesting and important as the story itself. And so, like, we sell, you know, the Flatwoods Monster Lanterns, and those have been those were the literal first novelty item created to celebrate the Flatwoods Monster all the way back in the very early 70s.
Awesome.
And those kind of got resurrected in the 80s and have been in production ever since. So like the fact that I personally know and would call a friend, John Gibson, who's the guy that had a maid and who was personal friends with one of the witnesses at the time as a childhood friend. And that this same guy still has these made, like, literally this morning, John dropped off two boxes of lanterns to me because I texted him Monday to say, hey, I've got six of these. I need more. So that is really, like, there still feels like an incredibly strong connection to, like, it feels like it's a living history that hasn't stopped and that I get to participate in and manipulate and shape, you know, shape forward. So that's a real honor and privilege.
That's awesome. That you had mentioned the pop culture aspect of the Flatwoods Monster. And since I've seen things from the museum, I know that you've got about one of everything, like you said, that's ever been made. But what is one of the furthest reaching items that you have, something that's outside of West Virginia, maybe even outside of the US? What's the furthest away that you've got?
Well, I've actually have a ton of Flatwoods Monster memorabilia that was all made in Japan. So like vinyl toys and like pins, you know, all little figures. Like I've got a little figure that's like maybe an inch and a half tall that would have been available and maybe still would be available in Japan at basically like a trinket machine. Like you put in so many coins and turn the handle and it comes out. And, that I think is so cool. You know, the stuff like that, So the stuff from Japan, I've got a piece or two that was sent to me by a friend of mine that lives in Hong Kong, whose name is, I think I'm going to say this right, but I might say it wrong, but I think it's Chuck Fay, and I don't know if a paranormal investigator would be the right word from Hong Kong, but he's definitely in the sort of paranormal media space in Hong Kong, similar to like, you know, Small Town Monsters, but in Hong Kong. So he has sent me some stuff from Hong Kong as well. Something else that I think is really cool too is I've had several international visitors come and then write about the Flatwoods Monster or and then also maybe mention, you know, the Flatwoods Monster Museum and that sort of stuff in locally printed and read, you know, publications. So I have a few magazines on display that are, you know, that are in other languages, but that are like contemporary. And I want to say there's one from Sweden. And then the other is, I think I'm going to forget Finland. I think Finland and Sweden. I hope I didn't get those wrong, but, I just think that's cool that there are these publications that I have on display that I can't read.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That is pretty neat.
So who knows what they wrote? Might all be bad. I don't know.
You're just displaying a horrible review and not even aware.
Yeah, they're talking about, boy, that guy that was working when I was there, he wasn't very nice at all. And I really don't even know why I came. There was nothing. I have it on display prominently.
No, I highly doubt that that's what it says. Highly doubt it. Well, being surrounded by all of this, all the stories that come in, and then, of course, being surrounded by the story itself of the Flatwoods Monster, Do you have any personal stories of things that have been weird that have occurred for you? Not necessarily, obviously, Flatwoods Monster related, or maybe not Bigfoot right. related, but anything odd?
Well, I guess the answer is maybe, but I'm really not sure. There was a time when I was almost positive that I did see a UFO, but the more that I think about it, the more I'm almost positive that I saw a conventional aircraft that just tricked me. Cause I think it was circumstances. I think it was a plane that was really high altitude, but that was reflecting light in just the perfect way that the light was very bright, like from the sun, to where the only thing I could see was a sort of glow of light. But I'm almost positive it was just reflection, but who knows? And if it was conventional, it would have had to have been flying away from me in such a way that it basically looked like it wasn't moving. It looked like it was standing still. But also, keep in mind, at the time I was driving and going probably 35 miles an hour.
Right. So
who knows? There could have been movement that I couldn't detect. And it wasn't cloudy, so there wasn't any judge it off of if it was moving like a little bit. So that, I mean, that's a possibility, but I kind of doubt it. But this one time though, there was a ghost hunt going on at the Elk Hostel, which is just right beside of us. So it's also called, that's what the folks that own it now call it, but most folks locally refer to it as the Draft House, because at one time it was a bar called the Draft House. But it had like a big hotel section on top of it. I mean, it's a big building. I was in there once. Occasionally they put on, you know, they'll open it up for things like that. It's not very common when they do, but it is an old building. So I was there for one, and this younger guy was walking around with like this contraption that consisted of like some sort of screen and then some sort of device that shows like a camera that shows what you're looking at. But then also like it can pick up on the human form.
Okay.
That every so often you would see. And there was some stuff that would just look like it was showing nothing. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes it would show basically like a stick figure.
Yeah.
And I'm sure this is old news to you and anybody listening to this, but it was new to me. That basically what that's supposed to show is like there is something there and that this thing is picking up on it and we can't see our eyes. Well, of everything paranormal related, ghosts are probably the thing that I'm the least convinced of, biggest skeptic on. So they were filming this room. And this guy was holding this contraption and there was like four people behind him, like watching it. And they were zoned in on the corner of this room where it looked like there was like, according to the screen, it was a stick figure of what looked like somebody sort of like sitting in the corner. So me being the skeptic and, you know, not too worried about it kind of guy. I just said, I'm going to go over there. So I just went over and stood in that corner. And as soon as I did, according to all the people watching the screen, that whatever was just sitting there still, like it like went up to like the opposite corner, bounced across the wall and then back down where I was.
Yeah.
And at that same time, I keep in mind, I didn't know that was happening on the screen.
Right.
But at the same time, it kind of felt like I got a very small amount of electrocuted. Like, you know, when you put a 9-volt battery against your tongue,
like I've not like, done that, but
yeah, but it felt that way, like all over my body.
Yeah. Except
half as intense, but it was all over. So like I jumped, it was like, ah. And as soon as I did that, that was at the same time that this thing jumped into my head. So like that scared the heck out of all. They were like, a ghost just touched you. And I was like, no, it didn't. And I was like, and they were like, you just yelled. What did you think? It's like, I don't know. So, you know, but I still don't know. Like, you know, I'm a big believer that that our minds can play tricks on us, and especially if we're in the right mood, you know, like when my daughter, who's 8, when she feels like it's a good time, she's going to try to scare me. So like she'll be hiding in a room and she'll want to scare me. Well, that puts her in the mind of getting scared. So like whoever successfully scares me, what'll happen is as soon as she sees me, she gets scared. So I just think, I kind of think that's what happens to us.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know anything, you know, so who knows, you know, but yeah, that's probably the closest thing. And my stepdaughter was with me at that time, and she would have probably been 17, and she still swears. She's like, no, like you made a ghost mad and it did you, because she was like, you're like mocking ghosts. She's like, you're not supposed to go stand where a ghost is standing. So, so she thinks that I made a ghost mad. I have no idea.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So we're coming to the end of the show, and I always ask the people that are on here to tell me a story, which you did just tell me a story. But I'm going to ask you for another one.
Okay.
It can be yours. It could be a story that I know you said you don't always remember what people tell you when they come in, but maybe one that has stuck with you somehow. Just tell me a story, Andrew.
Okay. So this one stuck with me because I was actually just walking to the post office several years ago. And as I was leaving, this guy gets out of his car that I recognized. I can't recall at the time if we had actually ever spoken before. If we had, it was probably nothing more than pleasantries, like just hi.
Yeah.
But this guy had recently moved to the area, and he's the father of a gentleman that I go to church with. And I know his son, Jeff, quite well. We're buddies. But his dad, I didn't really know. And so he gets out of his car, and as soon as he gets out of the car, he starts walking toward me. And I just assume he's just going to tell me hi. Because like, hey, I recognize you from church. Hi. Yeah. But he said, hey, you're Andrew, right? And I said, yeah. And he said, you work at that monster place, right? And I said, yeah. And he said, I got a story for you. And I said, okay, giddy up. That's kind of how a lot of this stuff works.
Yeah. So
he said, whenever I was young, he said, Jeff would have been young too. I don't even know if I should be using his name. I don't think he'll care. but I didn't say last names.
There you go.
But he said my kids would have been young. He said, we lived in Pennsylvania, and he said, in order to get to work, he said, my work started early in the morning, and I also kind of lived far away from my work. So I had to wake up real early in the morning to go to work. So one day, like, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning when he woke up. So one day he said he was driving to work, and he realized that like the sky above him was like pitch black with no, he couldn't see any stars or anything, which he thought was weird. Then for some reason he decided he would pull over on the side of the road and just like look at the sky. So he pulls over. He said, I'm the only person on the road, and look up. He said, and I realized the reason why I couldn't see anything is, he said, there's a giant disc in the air. This giant circle in the air that was, he said, it was traveling right along with me. He said, when I stopped, it stopped. He said, and it was big. He said, it was really low to the ground. He said, but it was just really, really big. It's like it took up like most of the sky. He said, there was no lights, didn't make any sounds, anything like that. He said, he just stood and looked at it. And then after looking at it for a second, he thought, well, I'm the only one here. I better get out of here. So he gets in the car and proceeds where he was headed, but like flies. He said, he just real fast. He quit paying attention to anything above him and just drove and drove and drove. He said, so when he got wherever he was going, he said he stopped and, you know, that he didn't see anything. But he said, I've always just assumed that was some sort of flying saucer. It's like, but I don't know. And I was like, wow, that's an incredible story. And he's like, all right, well, I'll see you at church. And that's it. And he just left.
Oh, man.
You know, and then I've never talked to him about it since.
Oh, man. Yeah, I just give you that story and then, all right, have a good day.
Yeah. Yeah, I got the sense that it was like a thing like, well, every other person I've ever told this thought I was crazy. Maybe you won't.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I'll leave.
Right. So
that is how it happens. Mm-hmm. Like the people that come tell me stuff, it's always the most normal people. What I've figured out is, if, and maybe this might seem mean, and maybe this will mean like stereotype-y, but like what I found is like when the weird people want to tell you something weird, they are probably like they probably need to speak to a doctor. But like when the hyper normal people tell you something weird,
yeah,
like it's strange. It's, you can kind of tell, like, I remember there was this one guy that was in, and I won't tell the whole thing, but there was this one guy that was in that was kind of squirrely, and he seemed squirrely. And then he wanted to tell me about these ancient carvings of Bigfoot that he finds that are proof that Bigfoot's been around forever, basically. So then I, just to kind of play along, I guess is the right word. You know, mm-hmm. I said something like, I'd love to see one of those sometime. Well, yeah. He's like, well, you know, starts digging in his pocket. So he shows me this rock and it's just a rock and it's not carved at all. Probably picked it up off a stone road where they just laid it down. And they probably crushed it a couple weeks before that. So like that happens sometimes too.
Right.
Stuff like that. However, that happens less. I mean, you would think that would happen more, but that happens much less. I would say I've had an experience like that maybe 3 times, maybe, mm-hmm. But it's mostly, I've had at least, I've heard at least 50 people tell me about something weird that has happened to them. And whether it was like the ones that stick with me the most are like, I'll be like out front and like, maybe like a couple walks in and like, it's like a man and a woman. And like let's say the wife is just looking all at everything, like looking at the whole room, and like this has happened to me seriously like 5 times, and the guy is just kind of loafing around, and my impression is, no matter how many times it happens, my impression is, oh, she's into weird stuff, he isn't, but he's mm-hmm. just being nice, and waiting for her to get done, basically.
Right, right.
Well, then like, you know, the one or two other people that are there, you know, they leave to where then it's just the three of us.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's when at some point whoever's the odd person out, you know, they'll come over and be like, so how long you been running this place? And be like, oh yes. And you know, 4 or 5 years. And then, oh yeah. It's like, you get people from, you know, all over, and like basically kind of idle talk.
Right.
It'll be like, I saw something one time, and I'll be like, oh yeah. And then they'll just open up and tell you their whole big thing. But it's like, they have to check, like they have to mm-hmm. check. They have to check to see if you even take, you know, like if you don't even take this seriously, you might not take what I'm saying seriously. Like, right. I've had people where they almost like they asked me questions about the Flatwoods Monster as if what I'm getting from them is they're telling me this is all fake.
Right.
Like they're wanting me to either join in and say, yeah, it's all fake, or to defend it. And right. then, like, once I defend it, then they might tell me their story.
Right.
So, like, that's the thing that I never would have guessed before running this, that that so many, like, seemingly normal to the point of being boring people have had these incredible experiences. And I mm-hmm. think they're a lot more than we think.
Yeah. I agree with you. I agree with you there. And I like that. I've noticed that too. People like they kind of want to assess you before mm-hmm. they open up to make sure that it's a safe environment for them to even tell you the next thing that they want to discuss. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, well, this has been amazing, Andrew. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today.
Oh, sure. Thank you. I appreciate the invite. I'm sorry it took so long to get on.
Oh, totally fine. Totally fine. Not an issue at all. So for anybody who's listening that wants to kind of follow along with what you do, or if they want to stop by the museum, where can they find you?
Well, so please follow us on our social media accounts on, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you know, YouTube, all the places. If you search Flatwoods Monster Museum, you should find us pretty easily. You know, visit our website at braxie.com, braxxie.com. That'll tell you, you know, that'll show you all the Flatwoods Monster stuff. And definitely do follow us on our Instagram, because in September, I learned how to make Instagram reels. So I've been really blowing that up. And making some pretty cool stuff, if I may say. That there was one one that I just made not too long ago, where myself and Mothboy Mike went and found Gray Barker's cemetery.
Yeah.
So that was cool. So follow us if you want to see cool stuff like that.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you again. If anybody wants to send a message to me, you can email me, heather@smalltownmonsters.com. Thanks for listening, guys. Until next time.
The Lore You Know is presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about this and other network shows, as well as Small Town Monsters films, books, our upcoming Kickstarter campaign, and much more at smalltownmonsters.com. If you enjoyed this show, consider giving it a like, rating, review, or sharing it with a friend. And be sure to tune in next time for another episode of The Lore You Know.